Welcome back, Movie Geeks. This is Rob, and you are listening to Movie Geek and Proud. Today, I'm going to review a movie that I'm sure everyone is talking about right now, and that's Avengers Infinity War. And I'm here with my friend Nick, who's going to help me discuss this movie because he is a big geek just like I am on this kind of stuff. So what better person to help me talk about today's movie? Just to let you guys know before we get started, this will have spoilers. So if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it yet, be okay with spoilers or watch the movie. Come back, listen to our conversation. And yeah, I just don't want to get in trouble. This is my second episode. I need to get off on a good start. And so Nick, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome, Rob. You're so lucky. No, I'm just kidding. Thank you for having me.
Of course, no problem. Now, some of you guys, I don't know if you've heard, I did another podcast called Bitch, I Ain't Scared, which was a horror-centric podcast, and Nick joined me on that as well to talk about the Afraid of the Dark TV series. So I should just ask, did you see the logo for the Afraid of the Dark movie with Paramount?
Oh, you haven't seen it? No, I didn't even see that.
Oh, yeah. So CinemaCon is talking about all that stuff. Yeah, exactly. And they released the logo of the Afraid of the Dark. It looks cool. I mean, it's normal. It's got the match and everything, but it's just real now. It's happening. It's October of next year.
Something tangible about it.
Yeah, so I'm really excited for that.
I purposely was off the internet, basically, until I saw this movie, because I was not risking anything.
Smart choice.
A few things out of CinemaCon, I saw, like, the Venom trailer, but even the CinemaCon stuff, I was like, I can't risk it. Someone on some website's going to accidentally post something.
I totally agree, and I've been lucky not to see too much spoilers leading up to when I saw it as well, but that was probably a smart move.
Yeah.
I am on SoundCloud as well as iTunes, just getting this out of the way. Make sure to go there, subscribe, and give us a rating and some comments. I want this show to be for a broader audience, and the way to do that is just to give us that 5-star rate so it goes across the board. Share this with your friends, and thank you again for listening. So, Nick, a little bit about yourself. Tell the folks what makes you a big movie geek and your fanboy of the Avengers.
Well, first of all, I just want to go piggyback off of something that Rob said before this about the Are You Afraid of the Dark, Bitch, I Ain't Scared episode, which I feel like maybe last time I talked to you said it was maybe like your most listened to episode, and I just feel like you didn't mention that, Rob, and I just feel like that's something that people might want to know.
It is the most listened to episode
with Nick Ruth on it, but that might be because my mom and a couple of people that I told, but who knows? Maybe it's just out there on the web and people are discovering that particular episode in general. But anyway, aside from that, I'm a huge movie buff, have been my whole life, and it's in the blood. My favorite movie of all time is Ghostbusters.
Ah, okay.
Favorite. I can recite every line. I mean, it's the first movie I remember seeing. Mm-hmm. It came out about 2 weeks before I was born, and I feel like the first time I saw it was on VHS, and I used to watch the movie, and I couldn't exactly time like where the scary parts would be, so I would block my ears and I would stand behind like the other side of the TV and I would count like, okay, this scene's 38 seconds long. And then when it was over, I would be like, oh, okay, now it's Bill Murray again and the dogs are gone.
What's one of the scary parts?
Sigourney Weaver getting dragged into the doorway by the terror. I mean, the terror dogs, just like the way they looked, used to scare the heck out of me.
No, I can definitely see that part being pretty messed up.
Yeah.
Okay. No,
I didn't even like the way the final bad guy looked. Gozer, the woman that plays Gozer with her creepy eyes and weird pink bubbly leotard.
Yeah.
It used to freak me out whenever she was like, I was like, okay, I got to stand on the side of the TV until the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man shows up and then I'm okay again.
Yeah. So when you saw this movie, did you have a full theater? Was it like really crowded or?
It was pretty packed. I saw it at the IMAX at the AMC Woodland Hills, which you might say, why are you going all the way up to Woodland Hills? And it's because I used to live closer to that. I used to live in Sherman Oaks, so that Woodland Hills theater was more convenient. And I was like, oh, I just don't want to go with a bunch of like rowdy people. That I was like, that theater kind of skews more respectable audiences, I guess.
Fair enough. Yeah. I
mean, but it was pretty packed. It was about 3.5 quarters filled, that IMAX
theater. Yeah, that was probably a smart move. Yeah.
And it was at 10:30 a.m. on a Friday morning.
Oh, wow. You got up early.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I went Thursday night. Mm-hmm. It was around like 10:45, and we went to ArcLight, and they gave us the dome. We were in the dome.
Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty full. I don't know if you saw my video.
No, I did not. Like I said, I literally offline
so,
for days.
So I posted a crappy video on Instagram, but Mr. Fig and one of the Russos came and introduced the movie for us and thanked all the fans.
Kevin Feige.
Feige, that's excuse me. Yes. Oh, I've been like, saying Fig this whole time. See, this is why I have Nick here.
Yeah, Kevin Feige.
Because he will put me in check on
No, I was like, am I supposed to know who Mr. Fig is? I didn't know if that was like your high school teacher or something and he happened to show up. I don't know.
Yes, Feige. Yeah. Feige showed up with, it was complete, like, out of nowhere. They just came out and was like,
thank you,
fans.
That's what they do for these big movies. They love to go around town on opening weekend and, like, sit in the theaters and see what people react to. I mean,
I was like, and watch, Chris Evans is probably at the midnight showing. We just missed our chance.
No, Chris Evans is on Broadway, so he wasn't even around for the premiere. He hasn't been on
the
interview
circuit. Oh, he didn't
go to the premiere
earlier this week.
Nope.
Oh, okay.
That's why he wasn't on that whole week with Jimmy Kimmel, because I think his show Lobby Hero is in previews on Broadway right now, and it runs throughout like May, so he wasn't able to be around for a lot of that stuff.
I was, I was really jealous that their premiere was just so close to my home, and I'm not there, and I can't see. Just all of them there at the same time must have been great. But I mean, and that's the real beauty of this movie is the fact that they're all together finally.
Right.
Like 10 years of movies and all doing things separately, and they're finally joining together to do this. So I was very stoked seeing this movie. I couldn't wait. I don't know, like Thursday came around and it was just like a normal day, and I'm like, I'm seeing Avengers tonight. And like, it hasn't sunk in until I was like on my way there, and I was just like, oh, we're about to watch it. Okay, so we actually have not talked about our opinions of this movie, so this will be the first time I'm hearing about the Avengers from him. And yeah, so Nick, what did you think?
Well, Rob, there's two versions of this review, kind of. One is a movie review, a critique of a film in general, and the other one is 10-year-old Nick geeking out at things that he never thought he would see in his life in a movie. Both skew very closely to each other. I really love the movie. This is a movie where, like, I just can't believe that I'm the only way I could have been lucky enough is if I were in the movie myself. But the fact that I get to sit as a viewer and enjoy this was just mind blowing to me.
What's the number? How much did this movie actually make so far?
So far, right now it's Saturday afternoon. The current update is that it has earned a total of $105.9 million. That's from its Thursday preview screenings and Friday.
Yeah.
So Sunday at 9 a.m., they usually kind of figure what the 3-day total is. And Monday, they adjust it a little bit to get the last dollars and cents in there. But they're usually pretty on the money. Right now, there's a big thing going on to see if it's going to beat the opening weekend record, which is currently held by Star Wars The Force Awakens, which made $247 million opening weekend. That is a big number to beat. Right now, it seems like some people think it could do that, but right now it seems like everybody's predicting it's probably going to hit about $240 million, which would be just shy. But most movies don't make $200 million. That's a very exclusive club to be in. I think there's only like five movies that did $200 million opening weekend.
I mean, and it's Star Wars. Yeah. I mean, of course.
I don't know if you can even do much. Some people were like $300 million. I was like, no, I don't even know if you can do that much. I don't think there's enough theaters in the country to actually do that.
Yeah. Well, I was smiling ear to ear almost the whole time. I mean, obviously there was a lot of darker stuff to not smile at, but I mean, for the most part, I was thoroughly entertained by this film. It had everything that I ever wanted in an Avengers movie, especially by the third one. I don't know if the second one got a lot of praise as much as the first. So there was a little bit of an improvement to go on, especially having so many characters. And that's the other thing, too, is that I think this movie did such a great job on giving everyone enough screen time to show their abilities, to work with each other. But what did you think about them splitting up into factions and not really being all in the same exact place?
Well, I was fine with it because people like you and I don't know if the general public knows this, but I mean, there's a fourth Avengers film coming out 1 year from now. So I'm kind of assuming that a lot of that is going to be in that movie. So I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
You know, I also don't want people to get lost in the shuffle. I like that all these characters have individual important things to do. And, you know, some of the characters are sort of regulated to like extended cameos, I guess, to some degree, like Falcon, War Machine, like they say things and do things, but their stories aren't as big as like Iron Man or Doctor Strange and things like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, they didn't get their solo movies. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot more that we can learn about, you know, Falcon and such. But I mean, for the most part, I think if they continue to upgrade their abilities and just be there as, you know, as a good support to the sort of main, you know, team of Avengers, I find that to be good. They're not left behind. They're still a part of the story and they're still doing new things.
And they've had their chances to shine. Everyone's had a chance to shine in all these other films too.
That's the other thing. Falcon has, this isn't his first movie,
right?
You know, him an example, like, yeah,
you're able to bring all that positive baggage with you. Like, he would say that, you know, remember when Cap and him had this adventure? Like, that's where this camaraderie comes from. You know what I mean? It makes sense.
So, what did you think of the story? So,
you know, this was just a terrific, this is a big sci-fi extravaganza. Like, this is, what's interesting about this is that the directors, the Russo brothers, their first two films that they did for them were Winter Soldier and Civil War, which are very different. Those are very much more down-to-earth political thriller, spy, mind control, stuff like that. And this is in space. This is other planets, other realities, things like that. So the fact that they were able to do this and still make it feel as grounded as it was very impressive. And, you know, tone is tone is tone, but I think they did a really good job at when the Guardians are on screen, they're able to keep it feeling like what a Guardians of the Galaxy movie would feel like without sacrificing other things. You know, there's certain things like we've seen an evolution of the Thor character, and Ragnarok is very different from the other two Thor films that came before it. But you kind of see an amalgamation of all those different ones. Like, yes, he can be serious, but the way he was in Ragnarok isn't necessarily dismissed either.
Yeah. You know? I completely agree with you. I told a friend of mine just last night that with all of these characters mixed in, not every movie was all the same tone, and all of their humor, their quirks and personality was still kept intact, even though they were all mixed together. And yeah, no, you're exactly right. Guardians felt like a Guardians movie when I was watching them in their ship and then interacting. Yes, a few things kind of changed. Oh my God. The Star-Lord and Thor.
Yeah.
For the, like, was Thor hitting on Gamora? Was he feeling on her, or did he just know what Star-Lord was trying to do?
It could be a little bit of both. I don't know.
That was hilarious. That was so funny. But I like that they showed Star-Lord's evolution with understanding what Groot says now. I mean, time has passed, and everything doesn't take place like milliseconds after the last thing that they've done. So I just like that growth with them. And Mantis seems to have been like integrated into the team pretty well too. You know, they have all their like power moves and combos that they were doing. They seem to know what they were gonna do. Oh God, I don't even know where to start. There's just so much to talk about with this movie.
Well, this movie opens with a spoiler.
Yeah, with a spoiler.
One of the two deaths, really.
Yeah. Oh my God. So up until this point, the only hero that we lost was Quicksilver, correct?
Right.
And
officially, you could say Coulson, but he's got his own TV show.
Exactly. So. Yeah. So, I mean, up to this point, like, we know what it feels like to have a hero die. Yes, it wasn't, like, a main character, and he's only been in one movie. But, like, I remember when they showed that, nobody expected. There was a giant gasp, and oh, my God, you know? So, and we knew somebody was going to die in this one.
Yeah.
At least one or two. to have it happen so quickly in the beginning. And what a place to start, too. Like, do you even know what that was? Like, how did they even get to that point?
Well, one of the post-credit scenes of Thor Ragnarok is, remember, it's Thor and Loki, and they're like, oh, let's head back to Earth. And then Thanos' ship shows up, so presumably this is just like a few seconds after.
Well, I think I forgot that Thanos kind of showed up right at the end of that. Because then the post-credits was Thor, you know, hitting the Guardians ship window. So I don't know if that happened because of what happened with their interaction, but then it started out with them like fighting, and I was like, oh my god, is this where Thor dies? I was like, I remember seeing him in other scenes, I think. But I didn't expect that Loki. I mean
he's the one person who I saw, when people were like, oh, who do you think's gonna die, I said the only one I'm willing to bet money on is Loki.
Yeah,
because I figured he's been in 1, 2, 3, 4, this was his fifth film.
Yeah,
and he's done about, and I love him, I love the performance of Tom Hiddleston and everything, but he's gone about as far as he can go.
Yeah,
you know, he was a mischievous guy, he was a bad guy, he was redeemed, he was bad again, redeemed, and how many times can you really do that? So here he kind of barters for Thor's life in exchange for, you know, everything, and he's failed Thanos, so there's a history there, since he was technically given that scepter in Avengers to, hey, you can have this, but you got to mess up New York and do this, this, and this.
Yeah.
So I just felt like him having kind of a semi-noble death in this film was coming.
I enjoyed that, too. I didn't think for one second that he was going to portray Thor, and I am actually glad he went out as a hero.
Yeah.
And not somebody that sided with the villain. I don't know why he thought that plan was going to work, but I get it. I am glad. And then, wasn't there a part of you that still thinks he's still alive and just like playing around like he always does? And
I don't think they could go back to that well again, because they did that with the second Thor.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to check, but I feel like originally he was intended to actually die in Thor the Dark World, and then they were like, maybe that's not such a good idea. Which at the time for that movie, it wasn't. This was the right time to do it. And I just don't think they would be like, hey, you know how we said we were going to kill people and there are going to be consequences? Just kidding. Like, I think he's gone. Yeah. And I think Tom Hiddleston had a great run, and I think he probably as an actor wants to move on and do some other things.
Yeah, but, you know, we still have, you know, flashbacks, and mm-hmm. you know, there's a time stone out there, they can easily go back in time, we may see him again. But yeah, I think it's pretty much official that he's gone.
Yeah, and they kill off Heimdall, Idris Elba, early on in that film.
That's
too.
Right, yeah. Now, a lot of people thought the Soul Stone was with him.
Right.
What'd you think about that? Like, him just passing on and just
I did not think so, just because I was like, well, it's not going to be with, I just thought it wouldn't be with everybody that we've already met. You know what I mean? I didn't think everything would be so conveniently placed together. So I'm glad that they kind of separated the stones a bit more.
The entrance with all the Avengers coming back and having them meet each other for the first time. Did you have like a favorite interaction?
You know, I'm one of the people, I love Doctor Strange as a character, and I know the movie is very well reviewed and received and fans really like it. I still think it's kind of an underrated film within the context of the MCU. And I was so glad to see that Doctor Strange was such an important part of this film. And I loved the interaction with him and Tony. And I was so glad that they're basically together the entire movie.
They are.
And I think out of all the pairings, my favorite was surprisingly, like, you know, when Spider-Man, Iron Man, and Doctor Strange were all on that ship going to Titan together, you know, mm-hmm. and he's like, hey, you ever see that old movie Aliens?
Him with the pop culture reference. Yeah, that would probably be something I would do to try and, like, you know, execute a plan or something. You just think of a movie that had a good one.
Yeah.
But, that was a really good interaction. I really enjoyed who's pairing. There was Bucky and Rocket. I thought that was kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
Just that small interaction I thought was cool.
Arm.
Yeah. And
he basically uses Rocket as a gun.
Yeah, I know. That was great. I also like when the Guardians came and, like, executed that plan with Thanos. Mm-hmm. I thought that was... Is that a comic book reference as well. No, I don't know if that scene ever played out these, where they all like ganged up on him like that.
I mean, it's very comic booky, but all these things are very like, there's moments and stuff that are adapted. But for the most part, I always consider these movies to be sort of their own original things, just with the essence and bits and pieces plucked from different things to make a film.
Yeah.
These Guardians of the Galaxy are not the same ones that I grew up with as a kid. The Guardians of the Galaxy was like a very unpopular comic that even comic book readers didn't really read. And they were all different characters other than like Yondu.
Yeah.
And then in 2008, when I was not reading any Guardians of the Galaxy, they relaunched with this current cast. So the characters that are in this movie like had nothing to do with Infinity War comics back in the early 90s, because none of these characters were really around or comprised of the team.
Yeah.
So, like I said, they take the old and the new and mix it and make their own thing.
Mm-hmm. You know? Was there a lot of like applaud moments for you in the movie? Well,
and the biggest one might have come from me when Captain America shows up and I was like, whew.
Of course, yeah.
Good Massachusetts boy, that Chris Evans.
That beard, he just came all aged and seasoned and mature.
It was just like seeing myself on screen.
Now, remind me, how did they, because everything was just happening so fast, how did they even get wind of them being in trouble? Did somebody call them out?
Tony loses the phone that Cap sent him at the end of Civil War, and Bruce Banner picks up, and essentially he's the
one
that
just knows where to find. That's the thing, it was just like when they located him, I don't know, maybe it was Falcon who found them, it was just how they found them so quickly.
Well, I think they knew that they were looking for the stones, because they had already faced off against two of Thanos's generals.
Yeah.
And Bruce, I'm assuming that Bruce was probably like, hey, Steve, they're going to try to find Vision.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like they knew where Wanda and Vision were hiding.
Yeah.
Because Black Widow says something to
Wanda.
That's
right, yeah. So
it seems like everybody's kind of keeping tabs on each other for safety.
That was a really good scene. I did like how they all came in. And for a split second, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. The rest of the Avengers are in this movie. Because I was pretty satisfied with who they've shown so far. I mean, we got Hulk, Strange, Spider-Man, like all of them came in. I could have watched them for hours. And I was like, yeah, we have Black Widow coming in. And okay, yeah.
You know, this is the longest movie they've done so far. It's like 2 hours and 31 minutes or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it uses every single second of it perfectly. Yeah. Like there's not a scene in this that could be cut out. It's just, it flows so well. It does not feel like it's 2.5 hours.
Yeah. One thing that I will say about this story and why I liked it so much is because when you are watching a movie with so many characters and for the most part, some of them do need to still be, you know, more developed as the movie goes on, they decided to pick characters, like you said, Strange was a really big part of what was going on, and we didn't necessarily learn, I mean, we learned a little bit more about him, but it wasn't sort of like a plot detail to be like, okay, this is a movie about Strange, or this is a movie about Cap, you know, like, everybody was content into, like, the story. I guess the only two that I would say is Scarlet Witch and, or Wanda and Vision and their progression and their relationship. I guess that was a really big thing. But everybody else was kind of like a standstill as far as their stories progressing. And all of this was about Thanos.
Yeah, this is Thanos's movie.
This is his movie. Yeah, I'm like, this movie's called The Avengers, but this was a Thanos film. Yeah. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, he got more scenes than everybody.
Yeah, he is consistently the one that probably eats up the most screen time.
And this is something that I did not suspect at all. I mean, I thought he was just going to be a villain like everybody else and just be there when needed, but we learned so much about him. I didn't expect Brolin to talk so damn much. Mm-hmm. He was silent throughout the whole 10 years.
Right.
I didn't think he had such a big personality to share so much about him, and like they gave him sentimental like
scenes. Yeah, he's very layered.
So would you say you were impressed with this villain? You know, Marvel's had this big problem with villains. A lot of people. Actually, I wanted to ask you this because I don't know if we've discussed this before. What would you say is the reason why people are not big fans of the Marvel villains up till now?
You know, I would say this. Like, if you were going to ask me as a comic fan, like, who has the best rogues gallery, I would be like Batman, Spider-Man, and the X-Men as a team. You know, I wouldn't be like, oh, well, let me name, like, Iron Man's top 10 villains that everyone's heard of. Mm-hmm. You know, and these movies are basically comprised of these different characters. So I don't think that they've had bad villains per se. I just think that's not the story that they've always been interested in telling. You know what I mean? They're like, Iron Man 2 is not about Mickey Rourke's character. It's about Robert Downey, about Tony Stark. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really liked Red Skull in the first Captain America. I think Michael Keaton as Vulture in Spider-Man Homecoming is terrific. Obviously, Michael B. Jordan in Black Panther just was great. But yeah, I mean, for all the pomp and circumstance and build up and talk of how great Thanos is going to be, it pays off.
Yeah.
You know, just the scenes between like him and Gamora where he's just sitting and he's talking and it's like a 4-minute scene, you know, and it's just, it's great.
He seems like this big giant brute that really doesn't have much to say. Like, he's too macho to be sensitive, and like, mm-hmm. his interaction with her, even as a little child, just the way he got on one knee and like was very vulnerable and like and
takes
caring.
His hand and turns her face so she doesn't see the violence.
I don't see superhero. I'm sorry. I don't see like comic book villains having such sensitivity, especially because he's meant to be this big scary guy and very threatening. And to see that, it still worked, and I was fine with it. And I think that's one of Marvel's strengths, is that there is a story and a character within everyone that they put in those films so far, and even the villains still have that side of them. I thought his look was really good too. Did you like the CGI?
I
didn't think
great.
That looked cheesy at all.
No. I mean,
very authentic.
Especially all the close-ups, like the tears in his eyes.
Very
the
humanized. Yeah, facial expressions.
Very small little ticks and stuff like that. You know, it's just, it looks great.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't get too into special effects because in 5 years, all these things are going to look so different anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always about kind of like, how does it make me feel? You know, like in Jurassic Park, I can tell that's not a real dinosaur, but I can still feel the emotional weight behind it. You know, so I always think them seeing the dinosaur for the first time in Jurassic Park is like the greatest special effect. Even though you can see like the lining around it.
Yeah.
You know.
You might have a better explanation of this. Thanos's like goal throughout this whole movie. Like, was he, I guess, getting revenge on what happened to his city, or was he just sort of like Ultron, just fed up with humans and what they do to their own planet? I mean, he wants to conquer galaxies, so I don't know if it's something personal or if he just feels this is the way it should be.
My understanding for this movie, what his motivation throughout this film is, that he's, you know, as the best villains do, think he's doing something good. And throughout this movie, Thanos is portrayed through his own eyes as he is the good guy, and I'll get to that after with the ending of the film.
Yeah.
But I think he, you know, he saw what happened to his planet. He tried to warn people but was, you know, ignored, and then he saw how everything that he loved was destroyed, and he says there has to be balance. There has to be something cut out in order for everything else to make sense. And I think, the idea of overpopulation throughout the universe is a big part of that. And the best way to go out was, we're going to strike the right chord, and it's going to be like, all right, half of you get to exist, the other half doesn't. It's the rapture.
Yeah.
But with Thanos.
You know? Let's talk about, sort of like the action in the movie. Did you enjoy like a lot of the action? Did it seem too over the top? Or
not over the top. It was great.
Yes.
It was the stuff that, like, you know, you couldn't do back in like, you know, 1993 with or 1992 with like Batman Returns. You know what I mean? This was stuff that, I mean, it was exhausting, but I mean that in a good way.
Yeah. I want to say that the battle between the Avengers and the Black Order?
Yeah.
I love the Black Order.
Mm-hmm.
I love, like, that was my first time ever seeing, I've never heard of them in my life. Is that the original Thanos team?
Yeah.
Do we see the I forget, the one who can move things with his mind, I forget his name.
Ebony Maw, the really creepy one that's taking Doctor Strange.
Exactly. Now, did he show up in another film?
No, none of them have been in any of them.
Okay.
You might be thinking of the other, who was in the Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, that's who I'm thinking of. Yeah. The Order, man. I loved every single one of those members. Mm-hmm. They were a force to be reckoned with. Yeah. Like, everyone with their unique abilities, and I found them to be kind of creepy in my opinion, and just how easy it was for him to just move his hand just slightly, and just so much happened just from that.
Yeah.
And I also think that the way they took him out was pretty good too. I mean, it took a lot of planning and skill, but I thought they were really good. All those fight scenes were pretty authentic. The choreography with the martial arts and the fight scenes that were happening were top-notch, too.
Yeah, the best fight scene in the whole movie, from my opinion, is the smaller, more intimate one when they're all on Thanos trying to, like, get him off and, wrangle him and everything, you know.
That is
Drax
one of my
is holding
favorite
him
scenes.
Down, Mantis is on top of him, Spider-Man's webbing him, Iron Man's holding the arm.
Yeah, they plan it, and then Star-Lord's like, remember, this was my plan.
Right. And then he's the one who also messes it up, which people are giving him crap about, but I love it, because, you know, these characters are flawed. He's a person, you know? Why wouldn't he be emotional? And it's not like, you know, they get that glove off of Thanos, you don't have the rest of the movie. But
yeah.
So something's got to happen. So.
That was one of my favorite scenes, too. I really liked how they all worked together. Yeah, and
I just really felt the authentic weight and emotion behind the whole thing, you know?
Yes, I totally agree. And it also was really good to see that it is possible to stop him. If Thanos was a villain that couldn't be stopped at all, like, I wouldn't feel such suspense or excitement when they do fight. I would just be sitting there and be like, well, he's just going to get away. He's going to mm-hmm. stop him. I thought it was a good tactic to show that even the Hulk couldn't take him down off the bat.
Yeah, and you do that
like,
at the beginning to establish
it. Like, you put your
it.
Strongest person against him, and then bam, like, he can't even do it. So now here's 2 hours of them trying.
Yeah,
you know?
Then Hulk's not even in the rest of the movie.
Two things. So I don't know if you would consider this an Easter egg, but I thought it was hilarious that Loki was the one to say the line, "We have a Hulk."
Right.
I thought that was brilliant. I cheered so much when he said that. But yeah, Hulk disappeared. And if you notice in the trailer, when they are all running towards something, Hulk is there.
And I don't even, is that... scene's not even actually in the
film.
No,
well, that particular shot is not in, because they do run towards the horde of aliens.
Right, but it does not look like that.
But it doesn't look like that.
Obviously does not have Hulk.
And then, Bruce is in the Hulkbuster.
Right.
So, I don't know, is that something they're going to do in part two or what? Because I didn't even know they filmed both of these at the same time. That's another thing that I learned in the last couple of days. So, yeah, they completely took that out. And so I wonder, like, at the last minute, they just decide that he didn't want to be in, like, they didn't want Hulk in it anymore after that, or?
I mean, I think that was probably just made for the money shot. I mean, it's not the first time that they've done that for trailers where they've put in the piece for the marketing purposes.
Yeah.
Or altered things. You know, I always go back to the movie Predators from 2010 with Adrian Brody in the Predator sequel.
Yeah.
Where, like, in the movie, he's just got, like, one little thing on his chest if someone's going to, like, shoot him. But in the trailer, it's like 20. And you're like, oh, that looks so awesome. And then you see it in the movie. And it's like, wait a minute. That's not what they showed.
The other thing was that what's your theory about Hulk not wanting to come out and play anymore?
I have no idea. I mean, I don't know if he's scared because he was getting beat.
No,
or
I thought he was scared. Yeah. I thought he is just super scared of Thanos, the fact that he was beaten. Another thing is he was completely embarrassed. The fact that he got defeated as well. Mm-hmm. And he almost died. He didn't want to die. Maybe he doesn't want Bruce to die. He could care a lot about it. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we'll find out.
Yeah. But I didn't mind that angle either.
Yeah. No, nor did I. I mean, he's still got the character of Bruce Banner, still gets plenty of play throughout this film.
Yes, he does.
Gets big moments in while using the Hulkbuster and all mm-hmm. that.
And didn't you love our cameo of the smallest, biggest guy in the movie?
Which was a stroke of genius.
That was real genius. And I don't think it mocks his size at all. I just didn't expect it. And it just came out of nowhere. I'm unfamiliar with that character and that sort of foraging or whatever, but I'm mm-hmm. sure you knew about the axe. I didn't know. I thought he got another hammer.
Yeah, no, I was familiar with Stormbreaker. Well, I remember a couple of years ago, or when they were beginning production, they showed like concept art, and it looked like what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I knew Peter Dinklage was in the movie, but I did not know he was going to be playing. I thought maybe he was going to be a voice of one of the Black Order guys.
Oh, okay.
So that's what I was expecting.
You know, I had Jane Lynch as the girl from Black Order. I know it's not her.
Oh, it's but Carrie Coon from The Leftovers, and she was in Gone Girl. She's Ben Affleck's sister in Gone Girl. And
okay.
I guess she was just on the Fargo TV series, but I've never seen it.
But yeah, I do like his cameo. I like his part. He had that Game of Thrones sort of voice in it too. I thought that was pretty cool.
One of the best lines in the movie where he's like, "That'll kill you." And he's like, "Only if I die." And he's like, "Yes, that's what I just said." The delivery of it was so perfect.
So let's talk about the deaths. I mean, there were just more than I expected from this. I thought they were going to have like one, maybe two good ones to just really surprise us, but they went all out on this one. Did any of them surprise you or confuse you or make you sad? Or
well, considering this is a spoiler review, I'll just get it off the bat. I think there's a very big difference between the people who die pre-Thanos getting all the stones and all the disintegrating, raptured people later on.
Yeah.
I think those people went somewhere or are coming back.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, they have to. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. I mean, we know there's a Spider-Man 2 coming in. Yes, Black Panther just made $1 billion. Right, he's coming back. But, you know, Loki, Heimdall. I mean, Gamora is probably the biggest death and the best. You know, I mean, that's an emotional scene. That's one of the most emotional scenes in the film between both of them. And the fact that he's like pulling her away to the edge in slow motion while she's still a strong character, but coming to terms with like, this is how I'm going to go out.
She made this speech and declaration about like, haha, you've been had. Yeah. And in my head, I thought she was talking in a sense of like, yeah, I'm your love, but you'd never kill me. She had no idea that he felt that way about her.
Right.
And there's something to be said about that, because as much as you have hatred for him, I don't know, it just, for some reason, she should have just known better. But like, she really believed that she was being used the whole time and that there was no love there. And yeah, she didn't believe it at first. But yeah, that was a very heavy scene.
Yeah, and she's got a lot to do throughout this film too, Gamora. You know, the first time she thinks she kills Thanos, but it's the Reality Stone playing an illusion. All of her stuff with Star-Lord and then this. And it's just, and this scene, obviously, let's just go over to this for a little second. Picking up a thread from a 2011 film that did not need to be picked up, but so glad they did. Red Skull is the keeper of this stone.
What was that? Like, was insane.
I was not expecting that. You know, I've heard theories be like, oh, he's going to show up again in the movie someday. And I was like, well, like, because he gets sucked up by the Tesseract or something.
Now, we all thought he just got obliterated because he couldn't withstand the power of the cube. But
right. It's kind of like an Indiana Jones thing. You know, all the villains in those movies always die because of whatever they're after.
Yeah.
It always comes back. They're not strong enough to control the power. And I mean, I'm glad he's in it. They didn't have to do it, but that is the attention to detail that they pay with these movies. You know,
I'm hearing this voice and I'm like, God, that sounds so familiar. And I'm like, should I know who that is? And then he showed his face and like, yeah, our theater went insane. We had no idea. Yeah. But you know, that's not Hugo.
Right. He did not want to come back.
He hates that prosthetic makeup that he had to go through, even though it was just on his face. Yeah. But anyways, Hugo, Diva. Hey, you know, I know. I mean, if you don't want to do it, fine. But yeah, I mean, that would have made this movie like full circle if he had came back. But I get it.
I was like, who's this creepy Shroud of Figures? Is this going to be somebody that I should know?
But it didn't look like him. It didn't look like him. I mean, I accepted it. And yeah, he's Red Skull.
It's like this character who's damned to stay on this planet and just keep leading people to this thing that can't be had. And it was just such a nice, you know, it didn't have to be him, but it was him. And it was great.
What a great impression, because by the voice, I thought it was him.
Yeah,
I really did.
Apparently, the guy is an actor from The Walking Dead, like a character actor. And
yeah,
I think he's also a voiceover actor.
Probably.
Because he sounds familiar from some animated shows that I've known.
No, that was a really good scene. And the Soul Stone, what exactly does it do? I read a little bit about it, but I still don't know exactly what it is. The only thing I read was that it can protect you from death by taking you to a realm where souls can be kept, or actually in the stone, I guess. But then I don't know how you would come back out. I was a little confused on how they were using it.
I mean, with these stones, I got to be perfectly honest, it really depends on who's writing it. You know what I mean? It's for whatever's necessary. But later on in the movie, you know, when Thanos does everything, he's sort of floating in this place with little baby Gamora. Mm-hmm. Again. So does that mean that, like, her soul is just
Soul is in there.
Like, if they kill Thanos, does Gamora's soul get free? Or is she really dead? I mean, I liked her death.
Yeah.
So I mean, part of me is kind of like, I kind of want her to stay dead. You know what I mean? Like, not that I don't like the character, but I'm just like, it was such a tragic thing. But yeah, it kind of does things like that. Like, you see Thanos in this very otherworldly state. So
yeah.
What exactly it does, I don't know.
It reminded me so much of Harry Potter. I mean, it just, like, these stones are like horcruxes to him.
Right.
And just the way that he kind of ended up and he was talking to, you know, Dumbledore. But yeah, I'm really curious to see how that all plays out. I still have a little hope for Gamora, to be honest. Did you think
Then I was also like, well, she's filming like 5 Avatar sequels in a row. Maybe she's just not around. So they were like, well, you're going to die in this movie because we can't
have
her.
Well, they'll probably not have her for the next one, but then maybe come back like after the dust settles or something. I mean, I don't think this is the last Guardians, but those members they kind of exchange members in the Guardians too. It's not always the same 5.
Right.
Okay. So, I mean, we could just see somebody replacing her for the moment. Did you think it was Tony's time?
For a split second, but then I was like, no. I switched my position like almost immediately because I was like, oh, that got me.
Mm-hmm.
That hurt. And I was like, no, they're not going to kill him if it's not in front of like the other main Avengers.
Yeah.
You know what I
mean?
Yeah. He's like, you're not going to do a movie where he and Steve don't make up first.
Exactly. Well, I have.
So I thought maybe he would die, and then I thought maybe something would happen with like the time stone or something like that. And
yeah.
I was kind of like, oh, I don't want it to be too much going back in time because that's kind of a semi-cheap move.
Yeah.
You know,
he was punching him really hard. I mean, he is human at the end of the day. I didn't think he would be able to take all of those punches, but yeah, I was like, he has to be in the second part of Avengers 4. He has to. So mm-hmm. I mean, it still, you know, kind of struck me, you know, right off the bat. But at the same time, I was like, he's not going to go. I'm fine with that. But
that probably did elicit like the biggest, like, no.
Yeah, no, it did. No, the theater actually went tearing crazy. Up. Yeah. I thought that this was Cap's time to go. But then he was like, I'll do one more for you and then I'm done. So
what I've noticed at the end of the movie when all these people are, I'm just going to keep saying they're raptured.
Yeah.
That's what I just feel like it is.
Yeah.
Most of the people that are left are all the people that were in the first Avengers.
Yes, yes, that's right. A friend of mine online pointed that out to me. He goes, all the Avengers that was left are the main 6.
Yeah.
That's it.
And I remember an interview a couple weeks ago back with Kevin Feige saying the fourth Avengers film is going to look, and the players are going to look very different from what you see in this film.
Okay.
So I think it's going to be like, look, only the OGs can, you know, save the day.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe somehow, you know, everybody's going to come back and do one last final battle. But, like, it's going to be, like, I'm really wondering where the next film picks up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's several months later and the whole Earth has been enslaved or something
exactly.
like that. But, I mean, can we kind of talk about who's not in this movie?
Oh, yes.
No Hawkeye.
I was.
No Ant-Man.
I was so pissed about that.
I was not so surprised about Ant-Man. But everybody's talking about Hawkeye and making these fake posters, and they're giving interviews like, why isn't Hawkeye in the thing? And they're like, well, it's a spoiler.
Okay.
They're saying Hawkeye has his own mission. I was like, oh, that's going to be very interesting. He's going to be by himself throughout the whole movie. Hawkeye's not in this movie at all. And I'm wondering, because they filmed both movies simultaneously,
mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if even Jeremy Renner didn't know that he was in it. Because, you know, they don't shoot these things in order.
Yeah.
These scenes, you know, he might not know what's being used for what. But I didn't necessarily mind it because there's already like 68,000 characters in this movie.
He always has a way of showing up and just being sort of this like Captain America, obviously, he's a born leader. Like without him, I don't think mm-hmm. this team would even exist. But there's something, I don't know, Hawkeye just for me, he just seems like a little bit of the glue. Like,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
always a moment where he is convincing somebody, like, you can do this. You're
right.
with us. Like, he recruited Wanda. And, you know.
Well, they even say that in the second one, you know, because
yeah.
they're alluding to, like, oh, this guy's a goner in this movie, where they're, like, pretending we need this guy really holds the team together. And then at the end of Age of Ultron, it looks like it's lights out for Hawkeye, but then we find out Quicksilver saves him at the last second.
Yeah. There's something also about a voice of reason with him. Like, I think he's the type of hero that you turn to for a tiebreaker. Mm-hmm. Not because he knows all or whatever, but, like, he just knows how to look at both sides. And just him preaching to Tony in Civil War, mm-hmm. like, he just seems like he's just down to earth. He's not under anybody's thumb.
He protects
thumb.
The little guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's the street level guy.
I've grown so much respect for Hawkeye, no matter the lack of powers or abilities or whatever. It sucks that, you know, he was hypnotized for the first, like, movie that he was in. But at mm-hmm. the, I really enjoy Hawkeye. Oh, I really do. Just him with his family even gave him more depth to me. Yeah. And
which is for the
him.
Movie. Like, yeah. He's in the comics, he doesn't even have that family.
Yeah.
You know, but I think it works. In fact, his family stuff is my favorite stuff from Age of Ultron mm-hmm. when they're on the farm. You know, I love that. Whole we've been defeated middle act, you know?
And you know, yeah, he did come back and help out in Civil War, but I do like the fact that, you know, he is honoring his promise to his family and you know, he's kind of staying out of the big stuff. He doesn't want to disappoint his wife and kids, and mm-hmm. if he needs to stay out to do that, that's still more respect for him, even though I didn't see him. But I have a theory that, because I looked him up before I came over here, and apparently he becomes this dude Ronan. Named Ronan. Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that if some of his family was raptured, I think that could turn him into this Ronan character. Yeah, that. But yeah, I think watching Bucky sort of rapture first, that hit me really hard. Because the last thing he said was he called out to Cap. Yeah. And I was like, don't do this to me. And he had to watch him. Like, how many times does Cap have to watch Winter Soldier just go right. through it? Every single time. It's so devastating. And kudos for Wanda for really... That was another thing. There was this run-on theme about who is... Like who's worth sacrificing for the greater good? And do we sacrifice
right.
one for all? You know? I mean, it just seemed like this running theme that was going on throughout the movie.
Yeah, it's this great moral, ethical question.
It happened with Doctor Strange, it happened with Gamora, and Wanda also had to make a conscious decision too, and like, I get their struggle. Do you think it's like super easy? Like, I mean, obviously it's not easy to execute, but do you find it perplexing to make a decision like that, or is it like, yeah, we're gonna do it, we can't have the world end, you know? Like,
I mean, what would I do in the situation? Or what would these heroes?
Well, like, if you were these heroes, I guess. Yeah. I mean, could you sacrifice your team and your friends to kind of like...
Yeah, I could do all that.
Yeah. No.
But, I mean, you know, I think even you see throughout the film that the characters, a lot of them realize they have to. I mean, at one point, it doesn't happen, but Star-Lord's going to kill Gamora. But mm-hmm. Thanos turns the gun into bubbles, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, and Wanda does kill Vision. But Thanos is like, uh-uh, and turns it back and screws everything up. Anyway.
I completely forgot he had the time stone when all that happened. I thought that was such an epic scene. And then I'm like, oh, God, he can just turn back time. Son of a bitch.
But it's great because it's this huge moment. You're like, oh, my God, they won. And then Thanos is like, let me show you why I'm the best bad guy ever. And it's like, no.
Oh, my God. Thor using the axe. Jesus. Oh, my God. Like, that was such good, like, cinematography.
Thor's entrance in Wakanda.
Yes.
First of all, got one of the biggest, and I was just kind of like, it's one of those scenes where you just want to jump out of your chair.
I know.
And, you know, Bruce Banner's like, oh, you guys are screwed now. And him coming down with Rocket on his shoulder and Groot next to him. And, you know, he's like...
I know, Groot came through with the handle and everything, even though he was playing defenders the whole time.
Yeah, and then, you know, Thor going for Thanos, and you're like, oh, he got him. And Thanos is like, you should have gone for the head. So
my
great.
Goodness, yeah. So do you think that axe is enough to take him out, or is there still something else out there that we need?
I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. Well, I have theories, but I actually don't want to say what some of these theories are because some of them are kind of related to the comics, too.
Okay.
And for anybody who is not familiar with it, I don't want to dare risk potentially spoiling it.
Yeah.
And they might not do it at all. It might just go their own original way. So yeah. I have no idea, but I think it's going to be something that has to do, like, you know, I was like, who knows? By the end of part four, Captain America would be wearing this gauntlet. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I actually almost lost it watching Peter Parker beg for his life.
Oh, yeah. That was heartbreaking because he's just a kid.
You know, everybody kind of comes in this and they sign up. They know what they're in for. They've faced war how many times in different ways. This little kid just wanted to help. And I don't think he really knew the gravitate that would happen going and doing a mission like this. And that's what Tony continuously tried to put into his head. Right. Like, this is so over your, like, you have no idea. This isn't just, you know, playing out movie scenes. Like, you're really putting yourself in danger and, like, just watching him. And then he hugs. Oh, my God. I can't even talk about it. Like, that was it's just too much.
Yeah, no, there was definitely, I think, if people weren't crying by that point, that's where everybody starts shedding the tear.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even matter if you think that, like, you know, oh, all these characters are coming back. It doesn't matter. You know,
it's emotional. Heartbreaking to see. Yeah. I hear you.
There was each kind of time when it would happen to people, you could kind of hear the rumbling through the audience like, oh, well, at least Falcon's okay.
No, I know.
At least Groot's okay. Like, and then Rocket crawling over to Groot as he's disintegrating like, no.
Like Black Panther is disintegrating and then, you know, the general, she doesn't know which to do.
Yeah.
She's like, my life is, what am I doing? Yeah. I didn't expect any of that. There was just too much of it. And then like, wow, what a way to dig the knife in further. Let me kill my man, watch him die, and then me die as well. Wanda just got the worst of it. And, like, God, yeah, that was... Do you think all of that was random? I mean, obviously, Thanos didn't choose who he wanted to die, but the fact that the original six was left, was that random or was that strategic?
I mean,
or?
Don't forget in the film... Well, there's two things to remember that I think a lot of people are forgetting because they're side bits of dialogue. Thanos recognizes Tony because he says something. He says Stark, and he's like, oh, you know who I am? He's like, says something like, you're not the only one with the burden of knowledge.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? We don't know. It hasn't been further explained. Doctor Strange is doing that thing where he sees all these different outcomes, and he says there's only one version he saw where they win. So that's why he hands over. You know,
I was thinking of this. Yeah, you know, that
Tony
one solution.
Has to live. This stone has to go to
Thanos.
He's
like, you'll see this is what needs to happen.
So
yes.
Doctor Strange is privy to a bigger plan that we don't know about now because he's gone.
Yeah.
For the moment. And I guess.
I thought it was interesting that Rocket was the only guardian to be left behind. Everybody else was gone.
Technically, I mean, she's not really a guardian, I guess, but Nebula is around. I think on Titan, it's just Nebula and Tony.
That's right.
Is everybody else on the planet?
I like Nebula. I love her scenes in the movie, too. I thought she did a good job.
Yeah, I thought she was going to be... I really thought, like, Thanos was going to kill her the first time. I thought that was going to be just, like, you know, she was going to have, like, a very small cameo.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's just very impressive that all these people were able to get this amount of screen time in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the other thing, too, is that there was so much laughter in this film. Like, I missed so much dialogue.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The next, like, three lines after every good joke are just lost.
So I definitely want to see this again. There are other things that I do want to catch. Just more of an understanding of Thanos's, like goal of him just sitting. Because if he really did all this for a sunset, come on now. Like, we just had a sunset in Black Panther, and now, like, we just did it again. But, I feel that watching this again will have a lot more clarity. I'll probably see stuff that I didn't see before, but it's mostly to just catch up on the jokes because I want to catch them all.
And they're great. You know, the humor, I mean, they're always pretty good with the humor in these films. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for being a movie that deals with such serious things and big outcomes and stakes, you know, it felt very well balanced in a movie that's all about balancing.
Now, there's going to be people out there, critics more so, that are going to say, well, you know, if you haven't seen any of the movies, like, don't even bother. You're like, you're not going to enjoy it. What's your take on that?
I mean, it's like any movie. You can't assume that everyone's seen, you know, the prior 18 films. I think if you do, and why would you see Avengers Infinity War if you're not steeped in all this by now? You know what I mean? You'd certainly get the most out of it you possibly can. But if you miss like a couple here and there, like you don't really need to see Iron Man 2 to know anything about this.
Exactly.
Film, you know, you got to probably see Doctor Strange, got to see like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But there's just certain things you'll have to be like, all right, well, if I didn't see that and they make a reference to it, I guess I just got to fill in the blank myself.
I had Rigo watch 8 films to prepare for this movie. Mm-hmm. And for a good month, we went through them all, and I got to rewatch some of these movies again. And it was so much fun watching again and just watching his enjoyment, learning about all these characters, right, finding his favorite Avengers and you know, just kind of carrying that out into this film. And I got to watch him watch this, and I was like, I did such a good job.
Well, I also marathoned these over the last month.
Oh, did you?
And, you know, I've seen them all a billion times, but watching them all so close together.
Did you watch all 18?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I didn't get a chance to go back and watch Black Panther in the theater.
Okay, fair enough.
So I got up to Thor Ragnarok, and because that's all that's available on Blu-ray right now.
Yeah, we rewatched any movie that mentioned a stone. Mm-hmm. So we did like Thor Dark World, Avengers, Captain America First Avenger. Well, so he watched all the Caps. Mm-hmm. He watched the first Guardian, the second Thor, all the Avengers, and then he had already seen Spider-Man and Black Panther. So he was all set for that. I made him watch all the Cap movies because I needed him to understand the relationship between Bucky and Cap.
Sure.
And why he was on Wakanda to begin with. The cape even got like a spotlight in this movie. Yeah, oh my God.
Got its own scene.
It sure did. He and Tony both like were working together to help out. I just thought that was brilliant.
It must be a fun day on the green screen when it's just Robert Downey Jr. and nothing else.
Yeah. I loved Spider-Man's iron suit. I thought that was brilliant. I love the way that they incorporated it in. Like it just came out of nowhere. Like, oh my God, I can't breathe. And then bam, give him the suit so he can like, I thought that was great.
Yeah. I understand the need for the suit in this film. I don't want him to have it in a Spider-Man sequel, though. I want him to go back to his
original.
Because even in Spider-Man Homecoming, I didn't really like that it's basically an Iron Man suit. Like, it talks and everything like that. I was kind of like, oh, I like it being a very amateur thing that Peter's just kind of, I just don't want him to be Iron Man Jr.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? I like Peter being, like, low on the totem pole of, like, things I can acquire.
Yeah, to be a superhero. I get it.
So I dig it for this movie, I understand, because spandex in space might be a little difficult.
Yeah.
But and especially going up against Thanos and things like that. But, you know, when he's back in Queens taking out bank robbers and jewelry robbers, you know, I want him in his blue and red spandex.
So what did you think about the end of this film? Were you satisfied with sort of this sort of cliffhanger to be continued sort of ending, him just smiling? And
yes, and I'll tell you why, because here's the thing, 50% of the people you ask are going to be like, oh, this is clearly part one of a two-part story.
Yes.
I get it, but I'm a little bit more in the other direction. Like, it's not a blatant to be continued like a Back to the Future 2, you know what I mean, or like a Matrix Reloaded or anything like that. I feel like this movie has a clear beginning, middle, and end. Like, Thanos is, in his eyes, the protagonist of this story, right?
Yes.
It's a happy ending for him.
Yes.
Like, he's sitting up there on that hill, you know, like, getting a little, like, misty-eyed. And
like, he did it. He went
happy.
Through
like,
hell.
It's not like the end of Empire Strikes Back when they're like, we're going to go save Han, meet you at Jabba's palace, here are the coordinates, and, you know, this, and this. We'll see you there. Like, this is kind of like, no, there's no plan. You know what I mean? The Avengers aren't like, we got to regroup. They're like, we don't know what to do. We lost.
Yeah.
Thanos won. Cut to black. End of movie.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Now, we know, obviously, there's an Avengers 4 coming out next year. And, you know, this universe is in no way coming to an end. But if for some reason, like, Marvel Studios went bankrupt tomorrow and no other movies were able to be released, this still feels like a complete movie.
Exactly.
It's just the heroes lost.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like, oh, we're not going to get, like, you know, closure. Like, no, it's just, you know.
Now, does Thanos have a phase 2 in his plan? Is he done? Because the only way we're going to really see him again is if they go after him.
Right. And if you notice at the end, when he uses the gauntlet, it looks all messed up. Like, is it a one-time thing?
Yeah.
Like, does it take something out of him each time? And, you know.
Well, the stones obviously aren't destroyed. He may need to, you know, maybe make another gauntlet or something, or, you know. I knew Nick was going to be in Captain Marvel's movie, but I didn't know exactly the connection that they had. I didn't know that she was in his back pocket.
Right.
Because he knew exactly what to do. And I'm like, there was never a moment in these whole 18 movies where you felt she was needed also. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I get it. Let's put a team together, Avengers, yada, yada. But I'm just like, I think Ultron would have been a very good reason to bring her in and have help out. I was just like, this whole time you didn't want to bring her in.
Which, I mean, is strange, but we also don't know what her status is.
That is true.
We don't know
true.
If
I
she's mean, lost he, and he's just doing, trying to get a hold of her, not knowing if that'll
work.
The
whole time and just never like, did it, yeah.
Because we don't haven't seen Captain Marvel. We don't know where she is at the end of that film.
I love that this movie takes place in the 90s and it took a pager to call her.
Yeah. Which, I mean, you know, she's going to hand that to him at the end of the movie. And you're like, ah, okay.
Yeah. Like, yeah, this is what we got. I can't give you a cell phone. Here's a, you know...
And, of course, this movie also, the post-credit scene. I mean, the post-credit scene is great.
Yeah.
I think a nice little setup with Sam Jackson disappearing, going, mother.
Yeah, and he had to do it.
Taking it away before he
could
get it.
He had to do it. I love it.
Broke my heart to see my Kobe Smulders disintegrated because, you know, she's my backup wife. Mm-hmm.
That kind of sucked. I guess it was supposed to be a revelation that it wasn't just the Avengers team that was raptured. It's happening all over the world. I kind of knew that off the bat, but I guess it was supposed to be a surprise that it was happening everywhere else. Mm-hmm. I liked the ending. There was a little bit of a false post-credit thing, because usually they'll have two.
Right,
they'll do it after the main credits, and then they didn't do it. We're like, no, what's happening? And then we were all like freaking out, and so we wait until the end, and it happened. But it was just a really funny moment because we were all expecting it to have like one little small one. Right. But I'm very excited for Captain Marvel. This is another character that I'm going to be introduced to that I know nothing about.
You know, she's military. I'm wondering if Chris Evans says no. As far as I can remember, she's never really been an official team leader for the Avengers, but she is up there in terms of like powers and leadership and all that stuff. I'm wondering if Chris Evans like steps away from Captain America, if they wouldn't just make like Captain Marvel a team leader type character.
That is something they can definitely do. Yeah.
Like if Brie Larson is game and is like, yeah, I'll do five or six movies, then why not?
Right. Yeah. I still have my fingers crossed for Winter Soldier being the next
I doubt it just because everybody feels like that's a big thing in the comics. And like I said, it's like Captain America is always Steve Rogers. You know, other people take up the mantle, but it's always just temporary stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Jane Foster became Thor for like 3 years, but now Thor is Thor, you know? So that's the thing. It's like Bruce Wayne is always going to be Batman. Peter Parker is always going to be Spider-Man. Like there'll be other people, but it's really them.
Yeah.
So that's why. And I don't know if having an assassin become Captain America would be like,
that's true,
a thing within the context of the universe that makes sense. You know, Falcon does become a version of Captain America at some point. But even though I don't think there's a need to even make him Captain America.
I would just hate if...
I'm not a fan of changing names. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
Passing on the mantle. Like, someone else is good enough to take up a leadership role, you know?
I just don't want the day that when Cap decides to exit these movies, Falcon and Bucky are going to follow him.
Right.
I want them to be able to stand alone without him being there.
And I think you could. I mean, look, even in these comics, you know, it's been an ever-rotating roster since the 1960s.
Yeah.
So it's always like that. And then, you know, it comes a part where like, oh, we're going to have the original team back again for sales. See, I don't even think everybody has to die if their contracts are up and stuff. You know, like it'd be really cool if like Robert Downey Jr. is like, you know, I want to step away for like 8 years. And if these movies are still going, that might be really cool to see like a 66-year-old Robert Downey Jr. show up like all grayed looking like John Slattery as Howard Stark, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Anything else before we come to a close?
Enjoyed the movie. Like I said, we live in wondrous times. The fact that we get content like this and it's as good as it is.
Yeah.
You know, I used to say last year when it was 2017 and Wonder Woman was out, Spider-Man Homecoming was out, there was a Defenders TV show, a Tick TV show. I was like, how is this even possible? Because 20 years ago, summer of 97, was Batman and Robin, Spawn and Steel.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, this is as good as it's ever going to get. And I genuinely thought that. I was like, well, thank God we have Saturday morning cartoons that do better versions of this.
Mm-hmm.
But here we are. So I'm so pleased. I can't believe this movie is out. They announced this in the fall of 2014, before Age of Ultron was even out.
we made it to this day.
And I just remember that El Capitan Theater, Kevin Feige came out and did this whole presentation and announced all of Phase 3, and we weren't even done with Phase 2. And I was like, this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
So I made sure I wore my seatbelt and I didn't do any stupid things so I could see this movie.
Yeah.
Now it's out. I saw it. I can't wait to see it again. I'm happy.
So I don't even think I have to ask, but this is, you know, something of a regular thing that I want to do, and that's rate the film. So on a scale of 1 through 5 rabbits, what would you rate Avengers Infinity War?
I'll say if like a 5 is like The Godfather, which I think is like near perfection, or Seven Samurai, then I'll say with all of those things, this would be a 4 out of 5 rabbits
okay.
for me.
All right.
Know? But knowing that's incredibly high, you know.
I mean, come on now. This movie is like super entertaining. I mean, not every movie gets a perfect 5 just because it's fun to watch.
Right.
I do look at all these other elements, and, you know, this movie is not going to appeal to a lot of people. I mean, you've got directors out there who feel that there's no creativity whatsoever in writing these superhero movies.
Are you talking about James Cameron?
I didn't want to name names, but yeah, there you go. But
Zoe Saldana is going to have a talk with him on the Avatar set.
Yes, she will. But I mean, a lot of people feel that this is not very innovative storytelling, and this is something to just get a quick buck at, and there's just no substance in these superhero movies of them just bashing and punching their way through a 2-hour movie.
Which I couldn't disagree with more, because as somebody who grew up reading this stuff, you know, there was a point where this stuff was considered schlocky. You know, we got stuff like Batman and Robin that didn't help the argument at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all this material is based off of great Greek mythology, great old stories that have been going on since the dawn of time, great science fiction things, you know.
So, yeah, I mean, for me, I you know, it gets a 5 for me. I mean, it's 5 rabbits. It's such a pure, entertaining...
I want to change my score to 5 for the show.
No, good enough. No, it's just a fun popcorn blockbuster movie. Of course, if you've seen all of them, you'll get a lot of the Easter eggs and the jokes that are in there and a lot of the connections that you didn't expect to interact with each other. But if you haven't, if you like, you know, just fun action, and if you have like high respect for some of the actors that are even in this film, it's fun to watch them play these characters out. I mean, some movies, especially animated, just hearing a voice of a familiar person you really enjoy will enhance your experience. And I think that this, along with like Black Panther, you don't have to know who they are in the movies beforehand to enjoy it. So to me, this gets a 5. One other thing that I wanted to do, and I should have did this at the beginning, but I forgot. Every week, and for every episode, I'm going to try and incorporate a question of the week. And this week was, what is your favorite MCU movie so far? And this one can be included if you want to choose this into your answer.
I need to let this one ferment a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You know, I need to see it a couple more times. I'm going to go with... And I've actually talked about this with a friend recently, because I think for me it's like Avengers, Winter Soldier, and Civil War right now. Because the first Avengers I saw, you know, I cried when I saw that. I was like, oh, they're not going to have the helicarrier because that's too weird. You know, it's S.H.I.E.L.D.'s base is going to be a submarine instead. I was like, that's fine. And then it starts lifting out of the water. And I was like, if this thing turns invisible, I'm gonna pee in the theater right now. And then the next scene, Nick Fury's like... All right, shields up, retrograde shield reflection panels. And I was like, oh my God. And Alan Silvestri's beautiful score is playing. I think that's my favorite scene of the whole movie. And Black Widow is leading them through the halls of the shield helicarrier. And I was like, my God, if I was like 10 years old, this would be my favorite movie ever. It's probably like in my top 30s.
Okay.
Like of all time. You know what I mean? Like with Ghostbusters, Alien, Jaws, Beetlejuice, Back to the Future, Godfather.
Yeah.
Like if I'm going to do like a top 25, top 30, Avengers is probably on there.
Okay.
You know, I rank it up there with the best comic book movies of all time. With like Dark Knight, Superman the movie, Avengers. I mean, well, that's the thing. There's so many now that like it's hard to pick, which is a really good problem to have.
I hear you. Well, I picked... there is one that I always turn to as an example of what a comic book movie can do and also range. from what you're used to seeing, and that's Winter Soldier. The political thriller aspect of it, I thought, was a very nice touch to put in a movie where we've seen, I mean, and this is not a bad thing, but just the cartoony aspect of a superhero movie, the fact that this movie can be looked at as like a clear and present danger if it wanted to. Right. I mean, and it opened up so much lore and like just the acceptance of Hydra being in S.H.I.E.L.D., it changed the game entirely. And I just really love that film. And Cap is my favorite.
Yeah.
So, I mean, altogether, that movie just stands out more than the rest.
Right. And if you ask me tomorrow, my answer might be Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
So that's, like I said, that's the problem we have. And any movie that has more Kobe Smulders in it is.
Well, there you go. A few people on Instagram actually answered this question as well. Lemos Rigo, he picked Captain America Civil War. Mm-hmm. Because of how action-packed it was and the personal problem that they had to resolve, I guess, with splitting, you know, the teams in half. Sure. And, like, going back and forth. But then he also loved Black Panther, and he says, Wakanda forever. And then Wine Whiskers Woo Woo, she says, that's hard, but if I have to, Captain America. And then she goes, ooh, that hurts. She
like the found first one?
The first one, yeah.
I mean, that's a great... that movie's like directed by Joe Johnson, who did The Rocketeer. It's got such a great nostalgic.
Yeah.
I mean, that Captain America trilogy is solid. If you watch all three of those films side by side and you just see the growth of the character, that is solid.
But yeah, she goes, there are several at the same tier of excellence. She goes, all Cap movies. And then she was like, oh, that was exhausting. and then she just was like, I still didn't do it right. Cause you're supposed to just pick one, but she couldn't do it. It is a hard pick. I mean, there are a lot of good ones that are out there. But yeah,
like I said, great problem to have. We didn't have this issue 20 years ago. So it's a problem that I'm thrilled to have right now and be able to debate and discuss.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for helping me with this episode. I had a great conversation, and there was obviously a lot more to talk about. If there is any scenes or Easter eggs or things that wasn't mentioned in this movie that you want to bring to light, definitely comment on the Instagram post of the episode or on Twitter. I'm also on iTunes, so make sure to look that up, Movie Geek and Proud. Twitter is MGNP Podcast, and on Instagram, just look up Movie Geek and Proud. Nick, where can we find you?
Right now, the only place you can find me that I will allow you to is my Instagram, Insta Nick Ruth. So like Insta, and then my name, Nick Ruth.
Very good, Nick. Make sure to tune in next Wednesday. I'll have another episode up. I haven't decided exactly which movie I'm going to cover for my collections yet, but I have an idea. It might be a little darker than what we did today, but I'm excited to do that episode as well.
It's going to be a Gem in the Holograms episode.
No, it's... I'm thinking of doing like a really dark drama. On the top of my list is Rec Room for a Dream. I think that's what I'm going to go with, but it just really depends, because I might have my friend Sean come and join me again because he's never seen it. So we might do that one. But tune in next week for another episode of Movie Geek Proud. Thank you so much for listening, and see you all at the movies.